shotglassdigital.com.
Hello. Excuse me. I didn't expect you so soon. Allow me to introduce myself. My name is Galen. Now, I'm so glad you could join me today. It is a marvelous story you're going to see. I remember it as it was yesterday. Your spaceship shooting out of the heavens. Oh, what a shock it must have been to discover what the world had come to. What a shock it was for me, too. Heavens knows. But I'm getting ahead of myself. So let us go back and see what it was like. Back to the planet of the apes.
Hey to all you chimpanzees, orangutans, and helmet-wearing gorillas. This is Richard, and you are listening to Talking Apes TV. We have lots to cover in this episode, but before we go any further, please everyone say hello to my co-host, Mark Ogushewitz. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Rich. How you doing?
I am doing very well and very, very excited to cap the live-action TV series.
Well, I'm looking forward to it as well, and we have a special guest on the line with us.
Everyone say hello to art director and concept designer Paul Bateman, all the way from the United Kingdom. Hey, Paul.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Thank you very much for joining us, and we can't wait to talk to you because we know you're all about the vintage apes.
It's nice to be here, and any excuse to talk apes, and I'm a happy man.
And we had you on a couple of months ago, and the response was actually pretty strong. People gave us messages on Facebook that they really enjoyed the episode.
Oh, that's nice. I thought you were going to say, who is that guy?
No, we had a lot of positive response on that episode.
Yeah, and I want to thank you for all the annuals you've been sending me from the United Kingdom, because we never got those over here in the United States, and it was so much fun to see how each different continent had their fandoms and had their magazines and had different pieces of merchandise.
Wait a minute here. What annuals? Are you keeping something from me? I have not seen any annuals.
He sent them to me. Now let's move on.
Are you trying to keep them away from me for some reason? Like, you know, that's not fair.
You know what? When the time is right, I will send them to you.
So, like, on my deathbed?
Oh, that's not good.
Always going to the dark place. So, Paul, before we continue, can you tell everyone what brought you into the Planet of the Apes fandom?
Well, when I was a very little kid back in 74, I first kind of got sucked into the TV show. And then, fortunately, my mum was a bit of a sci-fi nut herself. So she took me out to see all the movies that got re-released straight after the old show aired on UK TV. So even though I missed the initial run at the cinemas in the 60s of the first couple, back in the 70s, I was able to kind of catch all the movies when they went back out into theaters a few years later. So just couldn't get enough of it as a kid. Crazy about it.
Do you recall watching the TV series when you were just a wee one?
Oh yeah, totally. Just on the floor glued to the TV.
Now, when the last episode aired, which was Up Above the World So High in December of 1974, did you ever wonder where would this series have gone if they continued on with the Planet of the Apes TV series?
Well, at the time, not really, because, I mean, I don't think we really understood that it was over. You know, I mean, it had such a short run. I mean, I was completely surprised that it didn't come back the following week. And I think it was so fabulous that I just kind of felt as though, you know, eventually it'll come back. You know, I didn't know when. I mean, like nowadays, we're also media savvy and we understand, you know, we get to hear on the internet, you know, how long a show's going to be and when the final episode's going to be on and all that information's at our fingertips. But back in the early 70s, we weren't, certainly in England, we had no idea that it had been cancelled, and maybe the older kids understood that, but I was only little, you know, and I just thought, well, eventually it'll come back, because every other show, you know, it might be off the air for 6 months, but eventually there it was, you know. So I just kind of assumed, well, like down the road it'll return.
So about 3 years later, when you're turning on the TV and it's still not there, you kind of got it.
yeah, I guess it was a bit of a slow adopter, but yeah, so, I mean, I wasn't really sure what to expect. I mean, I just thought, when you know it is, when you really love a thing, you just kind of think, well, obviously, eventually, somebody's going to see sense and bring this back, even if it is 15 years later, you know?
Mark, when the series ended for you, did you ever wonder, if the series ever continued, this is the way I would want it to go?
You know, I never really thought about it until you asked me that question. I, you know, as a kid, I don't even remember what I thought when it was over. It was a long time ago. I probably just moved on to the next thing.
Well, coming up on this very special episode of Talking Apes TV, we are going to put a cap on the live-action TV series and give you listeners our ideas of where we would want the show to go if CBS asked us for our input for a second season and beyond.
Let's backtrack a second, because now you asked us both the question. When you were a kid, did you ever wonder where it might have gone when it was over, or what was your reaction to it just going off the air?
You know, that's a good question, and I recall being very sad because I came back the next week and instead of getting Apes, we got Frank Sinatra. As a five-year-old, that just paled in comparison. So I never did wonder where the series would go. I would always play Planet of the Apes in the backyard with all my friends, and I would make up stories, but I never thought, huh, if the series had continued on to a second season, this is the way I wanted it to go, and didn't really think this through until we started wrapping our heads around this particular episode.
Right, right. You know, before we go any further, we should probably mention another thing that we're going to be talking about on the show today is we're going to look at the 1981 wraparounds that Roddy McDowall shot as Galen when ABC decided to recut the episodes into 5 TV movies.
Wow. Paul, do you recall when ABC did this in the early 80s?
We didn't have the ABC in the UK. You know, we only had 3 channels back then.
There are kids out there going, oh, what are you guys, cavemen?
3 channels, can you imagine that? The BBC and then BBC Two and then ITV, and that was it. So we didn't get those wraparounds and we didn't get the TV movies for a long, long time. And I don't believe they ever aired them with those wraparounds attached. So for me, it was quite a recent discovery seeing those online, you know, and it was exciting to see Roddy back in the Galen makeup, even though he was a little grayer. But hearing all the stuff about how he... You know, the little kind of story elements that he drops on you were kind of quite exciting. It was like, oh, really? There's more to this, you know?
Yeah, I love the closure they put on the series, but we'll get to that in just a little bit. We're also going to have some listener feedback that we've been postponing from episode to episode, so we'll get to some of that this week. So now, let's talk about the continuation of the Planet of the Apes and where we would have wanted the series to have continued.
Well, you know, why don't we start off with Paul and find out where you would have liked to have seen season 2 go if the show had continued. Do you think that it would have led to Pete and Alan maybe someday escaping off the planet?
Well, I don't know. I mean, for me, I always kind of assumed that Verdon and Burke, they'd stay on the Planet of the Apes. I didn't really sort of see it as being something that I necessarily wanted for them to go back. I mean, I always assumed that they'd get deeper into the Forbidden Zone and, you know, they'd maybe get closer to getting away and we might see them take off or something. But I never expected to sort of, you know for definite that they got back home safely. So for me, I would have been just as happy if they'd just kind of carried on as they were going, because I liked the Ape Planet. I didn't kind of want them to leave. I wanted them to sort of stay where they were and work something out, you know, maybe find their own Novas, so to speak, you know. But I was crazy about the Forbidden Zone, so I was really kind of keen on them kind of getting more into that sort of territory. I wanted to see more of the kind of ruins and see that kind of clashing of cultures, you know, the kind of ape culture and the primitive humans, like, you know, kind of coming up against stuff that we're familiar with and how that might evolve into interesting stories. Because the very limited kind of, you know, few episodes we had where they kind of encounter holograms or technology or, you know, down in the underground or whatever, you know, that always sort of seemed like such a lot of fun. So I couldn't wait to see, like, you know, maybe a huge city, you know, that was all kind of wrecked and like an expansion of the Forbidden Zone idea rather than like a little corner of it like you always got in the movies and a single match shot. I mean, back then, I imagine if they had gone there and they'd done a second season, that they would have had to kind of expand the territory to make it a bit more interesting and handle a little bit of that sort of stuff. But nowadays, of course, they could do it at Doddle, couldn't they, with CGI? But back then, I imagine they would have been quite modest. I think it would have been more street scenes covered in bricks, you know?
Yeah, I love their ruined effects where you have a couple of bricks here and there and some wire and there you go. There's the apocalypse.
I mean, I just want Galen to be happy. That was a big thing for me. It was, you know, they almost, like, Verdon or Burke could have got shot, you know.
Yeah. Oh, no kidding.
Well, we talked last episode about our favorite characters, and we both talked about Galen and how he really was the one unreplaceable character. Mm. He was the character that everybody related to, and therefore he was the character that really held the show together.
Yeah.
So we all wanted Galen to be happy.
You know what? We have some listener feedback here from Guy Godman, who wrote in a while ago, and I want to read this right now because this ties in perfectly, Paul, to what you were just saying. And Guy writes, he's a buddy of yours. He's from England. Do you know him?
Yeah, I think I might have seen him around the Queen's house.
Touche. All right, Guy writes, when ratings started to fall, other writers and experienced producers were on hand, and there was a late rescue attempt by Star Trek's legendary creator, Gene Roddenberry. So says actor Bill Blake. And Bill Blake says, the show was starting to falter in the ratings, so Gene Roddenberry and the producers were beginning to look at all of this, and Gene was starting to help them in efforts to restructure the show. Gene had already contacted Westheimer Optical Company, who did the special effects for Star Trek, and was going to contact them to do mats, opticals, special effects, etc. Anything to help give the show a bigger, more epic look on the small budget they had. Through clever writing, time travel, etc., they were planning to move the show forward to the time period of the original 1968 film, bringing everything back full circle. Did you ever know that?
Wow.
Yeah, we might have ended up in the Forbidden Zone.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. I think I always assumed it was kind of just like an alternate parallel times frame. You know, I didn't assume it was a long way before it.
Can you refresh my memory? You said actor Bill Blake. Who was that?
Bill Blake was an actor and a stuntman. He was in the episode The Interrogation, and he was a makeup artist and actor who toured with the stuntwoman Paula Crist in their Zira and Cornelius live performance during the 1970s.
Zira and Cornelius live performances? I want to know what that is.
Boy,
I got to look that
we
up.
We are going into uncharted territory here.
I think I'm going to look that up and see if I can, maybe we can discuss that in the next episode.
Oh, definitely. We got to revisit that. No leaving that one hanging.
Those live performances were a worldwide phenomenon, because I remember getting like little posters and flyers through with the Planet of the Apes fan club stuff back in the 70s.
Wow, this is the first time I'm hearing of this.
I've never heard of this. This is really interesting. I want to see a Zira and Cornelius live show.
Well, you know what? As we heard from our good pal Gary Dubin, who was the, hey, look, it's a man child ape from the original Planet of the Apes film, there might be a live Planet of the Apes rock opera coming our way.
Yeah, he did say he wanted to do something like that.
You know what? We're getting way ahead of ourselves and way off course here. So Paul, you were saying about your continuation of the Planet of the Apes TV series if they came knocking.
Oh, yeah, Forbidden Zone, Forbidden Zone, Forbidden Zone. I mean, the only thing that makes me worry, you know, when you think about producers from outside the mix kind of coming in and getting involved, is that the legacy of that kind of thing is not always good. Space 1999 inherited a producer from Star Trek for the second season, and it wrecked the show because they basically kind of tried to turn it into something that it wasn't. And there are other shows like that. You know, when you look at Buck Rogers in the 80s, you know, they tried to turn the second season of that into Star Trek, and it all kind of, you know, train wrecked. So it does make me wonder just how far they might have gone. You know, would we have had like a kid mutant or something as a friendly sidekick? Or
you're talking about if Gene Roddenberry had been able to move forward.
Exactly. I mean, who knows where it might have gone if outsiders had gotten involved, you know?
Wait, being in the mid-70s, you know what direction this would have gone? A vaudeville variety show, like the Star Wars Holiday Special?
No, I know what they would have done. They just, you know, Star Wars was on the horizon, so if they'd managed to kind of keep it going for another year or so, I guarantee you somebody would have said, we need to take this into outer space.
Oh, now they're on a sand planet, now they're on a jungle planet and a snow planet.
Well, they have a comic now that's Star Trek and Planet of the Apes.
Mm.
Yeah, the circle is now complete. All right, so Paul, those were your ideas. Anything to add, or can I go on with mine?
Oh, go ahead.
So this is what I have in mind if CBS came knocking at my door wanting me to outline a whole second season and beyond. The first episode starts with Alan, Pete, and Galen having just formed a society where apes and humans all live together. Now, their home base is a place that will eventually become the Forbidden Zone. In the first episode, we see Alan carving out what becomes a doll for a resident child, and going one step further, like Alan always does, he uses his vast knowledge in electronics to make the doll say, Mama! Do you see where I'm going with this?
I see where you're going.
All right. Now, throughout the series, I put a lot of thought into this. They search for the information that was told by the hologram in the episode The Legacy. They search out and find the cities where this information has been hidden. When they find the last piece of information, they also find a radio. I'm picturing like a ham radio. Pete, having a history in radio repair, because Pete has a history in everything, he gets it working and they are able to send out a signal. At the end of the second season, that signal is heard and a transmission is sent back from a chimpanzee named Caesar. There you go.
I didn't expect anything like that from you.
How dare you?
I thought for sure you were going in a different direction.
I love when things tie all together, and to tie this in with the films, I had a blast with this.
Let me ask you a question, because I'm on board with most of what you said, with the exception of maybe the doll that says mama, because in my version of the timeline, I almost kind of seeing this stuff happening after the Planet of the Apes movie, because Dr. Zaius says, you know, other humans have landed before. I think we discussed this in detail in an earlier episode. But that being said, even if we wanted to go there, because it's like these really nice twists and turns that you put into your season two, how do we get to the community of humans and apes living together that you mentioned at the beginning?
I was going off of how the other shows were structured, and sometimes they would just rush right into something to get the whole season or plot or story moving. So maybe we don't see a whole village. Maybe we see like a small community of 10 people.
I guess my issue with it is basically this. I like to see how things get to be to a certain point. So it almost seems like what you described would be a really good season 3. And season 2 would be all the stuff that kind of gets us to this village where some of the humans and the chimps are living together.
All right. All right. You know what then? I'll cut out that first line and that'll be my season 3.
Okay.
How about, like, you know, if the guys do kind of end up in the Forbidden Zone, that eventually they are quite likely to encounter mutants, right?
Oh, yeah.
And they meet a character that's kind of a little bit more of a benefactor rather than a bad guy, who, like, many mutants had psychic abilities, didn't they?
Yeah, ESP.
What if a mutant has seen all the different kind of possibilities, all the ways that things could pan out, and perhaps he has a map, and on that map he's got Taylor arriving, the consequences, the Earth goes boom. You know, he's got Vernon Burke arriving in a different time stream, a different kind of thing happening. And in their life, like, they leave the planet and things go boom. And then you've got even the animated show could be connected in there somewhere, where the two astronauts in that are another stream. And basically, it never ends well. And the only way it can ever kind of work out really well is if Vernon Burke stopped trying to go back and just decided to stay. So in order to kind of save the Earth, they stay put.
That could be an interesting way to go, in the sense of, I really like the ending of how they just have to kind of accept where they are. Because as the end of a series, instead of doing the predictable thing where they get in their spaceship and they take off, it would be their acceptance to where they are. And that might be more of an interesting way to end a series like this.
Yeah, you could tie it all in terms of like parallel worlds and, you know, alternate possibilities and stuff like that. And that way it doesn't all need to kind of make sense. Somebody could be a central character with, you know, these kind of weird abilities, would be able to kind of tie it all together somehow. You could even do the Wahlberg, you know, kind of Tim Burton version, and they could say like, oh, and then this character comes back and that, no, that doesn't make sense.
You'd see them all like around a campfire, and like some old wise man or chimpanzee, depending whether it's humans or apes, is telling these tales, and they tell the tale to Tim Burton, and the kids just break up and laugh and going, that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
The thing I like about your idea, though, Richard, in the first place, is that it reminds me a lot of the old, you know, Logan's Run plot, the idea of sanctuary and the idea that somewhere is a place where everybody can be happy outside the norm, you know. So it almost feels like it ties into that whole kind of dystopian future sort of stuff that was all the rage at the time. You know, I quite like that idea that it's a pursuit for kind of like a better place, isn't it? It's a pursuit of somewhere kind of utopian. So perhaps there are other humans out in the Forbidden Zone somewhere. Maybe it's not all mutants. Maybe there's still people out there.
I'm very glad you made that Logan's Run parallel, because I was trying to really get a 1970s feel for this.
Well, it works. I think that feels that way.
Now, what do we think about my second season closer, where they get the radio working and they get a transmission from Caesar?
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that, because I'm not sure where that would lead. And I think that to determine how I feel about that as a cliffhanger, I'd have to know where you were going to go after that, because sometimes cliffhangers feel like they give you this cliffhanger, but there's really nowhere you can go, and then we get disappointed. And this feels like one of those cliffhangers, but if you have a direction to go with it that's really good, then I'm on board, because it would be a good cliffhanger as long as there was a great episode one for the next season.
And I've got a great direction for this, so CBS, give us a call.
What if the message they got was from, like, Taylor, and it sounded as though there was some kind of time distortion, something weird, and he's on the East Coast, so they've got to travel across the country.
Maybe they get his SOS as he's crashing.
I did first have this as Taylor, but then I thought, you know what, let's go one step further, and they get a transmission from Caesar, because that can just blow doors in any kind of direction. Are they hearing it from the future, from the past? Is now society filled with apes?
Yeah, or what if it's Logan?
Okay. Now, with that, I would actually like to now move on and tell you guys where I think that the television series should have gone if they had kept it on the air for another season, or maybe even more than just one season, maybe a couple of seasons. I actually thought where Richard was going to go was back to the disc and the searching out of the computers.
Okay.
And so when you didn't go there, you went off in a completely different direction. You kind of threw me for a loop. So my idea actually starts with going back to that disc and having them search out the computers. I think that's the natural way things should have gone. It was already set up. It was already kind of flowing. They lost it for a little bit, but I thought they could have very easily come back in. But I didn't want it to end there. And you can blame our last podcast episode for this, because as we talked in depth in the last episode, and as I was editing the last episode and we kept talking about Carcia, I realized that she is where this series needed to go. If you remember in Up Above the World So High, she basically was not happy that there were no chimpanzees in charge, and she was going to do something about it, and she was kind of evil, and she was going to try and overthrow the orangutans and the gorillas to put the chimpanzees in charge. And I want to see that story. When, at the end of the episode, the flying machine, which she's going to use to help her, that fails, she's not caught, she's not put in jail, she's still free. And I thought it would be kind of interesting, because she was such a great character, to move the story forward using her. Alan and Pete, they got the disc, and now they're going to start looking for the computer. And Carcia is going to find out about the computer. Look at what she wanted to do with a glider. She was just going to swoop in the middle of the night and kill who she needed to kill. If she finds out about this computer, imagine what she'll be able to do. So I thought we could pretty much have a story that was basically Zaius and Urko just trying to keep charge the way they do, you know, keeping the humans down and, you know, keeping on with that. And then we would have Alan and Pete still looking for their computer, but as they're doing that, they're still meeting more humans. And I would figure that they would bond with these humans and they would start teaching these humans things so that the humans can realize that they can actually maybe have a slight uprising to try and get their equality. And then you have the main villain, Carcia, who finds out about the computers, decides to continue with the glider, and really starts to try to set up this whole thing with overthrowing the orangutans and the gorillas who are now in power. And I thought that you could bring back characters from the other shows. Like, I thought you could bring back Abaro. Like, she could go break Abaro out of prison saying, look, I know I'm going after these gorillas, but you will be in charge of my soldiers. I'm going to give you that power to be in charge of my army. This would be very appealing to Abaro because he still wants to get vengeance on Urko. And so he joins up with her and they start to plot that. It would lead to this big clashing battle at the end of the series that would end in what I would hope would be the humans rising to equality. Not the humans being in charge, not the gorillas being in charge, but it would all lead to, you know, this climactic kind of moment that would end with everybody realizing that, you know, we're all equal, we're all intelligent, we can all kind of get along. And it would last about 5 or 6 seasons, because I think that if we put that much conflict into the show, and we keep the really great characters, like with the humans, when they're looking for the uprising, we would go get Dalton back from the Gladiator series. We could even bring Miro back. Yes, I said Miro from The Liberator. As much as I don't want to see anything from that show back, but at the end of that episode, he had this whole thing where he's going to stand up to the gorillas. We could bring them back into the human camp to kind of see how the human side of things progress. You know, maybe even Zaius might have a change sooner or later because, you know, he's smart. He's always thinking of things. And when he starts to realize how we can work together, maybe he could even have a change. The only apes that would have to be either in jail or dead at the end of this would be Carcia and Urko. Sorry, Urko fans, but Urko would have to be taken down.
No.
He'd have to be taken down.
All right, I'm going to veto that.
But it would be a great battle. Carcia and Abaro versus Urko, that would be awesome.
That would be awesome. Now, when you're envisioning this, does Urko have his helmet on or is it off?
That would be the final image as whoever strikes that final blow on Urko, because it's a kid's show and you can't really show the blow. You would just see the helmet go flying off his head and lying on the ground.
Like Jango Fett.
The thing that always made me wonder was, presumably if Planet of the Apes had been a more successful show and it had ran and ran, you would hope that each season would get a little bit more ambitious as it went along, you know?
That's what I'm trying to do here. I agree with you.
I can go with that. And I'm looking at it kind of thinking about, you know, whenever I fly across to California from London, you know, and I'm sitting on an airplane for 11 hours, you know, something very, very apparent apparent to you as a Brit from a little island, you know, is just how vast America is. You're traveling over these huge expanses of land for hour after hour, you know, and that to me, it just, when I think about Planet of the Apes, just fills it with possibilities, because you think, like, the world that we actually saw in the movies and the TV shows was so limited in terms of mileage, you know, that the whole world is out there, and it does make you wonder what else is around. And we're already aware of the fact that, because of the astronauts, and certainly the astronauts in the movies were aware of the fact that cryogenic suspension is a possibility in this universe. So who knows if before the bombs fell and the world kind of got destroyed and remade, that there weren't people sitting patiently in chillers somewhere kind of waiting to be resuscitated a few thousand years down the line. So who knows if there are people from Verdun Burke's future, perhaps with even more knowledge than they had, sitting somewhere in the desert, you know, waiting to be awoken, or already awake and leading kind of the return of the human race and planning on ways of perhaps wiping out the apes. There are so many possibilities. I mean, especially when you look at the movies and the idea that, you know, the way that they played with more modern technology and the idea that genetics is, you know, more consciously being altered and manipulated, you know, you do kind of wonder whether or not they could bring in scientists that are able to kind of manipulate biology and maybe looking at ways of putting humans back at the top of the evolutionary ladder and perhaps wiping out the apes.
I'm wondering if there's a way to kind of mix some of these ideas together, because what I liked about Richard's idea was how it tied some of the stuff from the movies into the television show. I didn't think about that when I was coming up with my idea, but now as I'm going through my idea and its complications, it would be real interesting if Pete and Alan, they continue going after the computer chip. And Carcia finds out about this. And when she finally gets her hands on a computer, it's as a message from, you know, Taylor is coming in. You know, and mixing all this stuff up to really kind of complicate matters by throwing in some twists like that. And also having the major conflicts of something that Carcia and Oboro would bring into it. It could make this whole entire, you know, show very, very interesting. And it would also be cool to see these characters coming back. You know, we only had one side character that was reoccurring, and that was the chimpanzee prefect from The Gladiator, made a second appearance. And so it'd be nice to see some of these other apes, you know, start to reappear, and then we start to no longer have episode, but we have created a world where they are continuously interacting with the same apes, and the conflicts that are started in one episode might be able to escalate into something much larger in the following episodes.
That prefect you're talking about, that was Barlow, Prefect Barlow.
Barlow, that's him. And I liked him too, and I liked it when we saw him again. And there were so many characters throughout the television series that I wish we could see again and again. And since it was so obvious that Pete and Alan were never going to leave the area of Central City, because they were always just kind of there.
Walking in a circle?
Yeah, so why not, why not bring these side characters back and just create this really larger story that continued throughout the episodes, leading to some final conclusion where we get some answers at the end of the series.
I'm so glad that you brought up the point about the disc and how they just forgot about that after the fourth episode. In Guy Godman's big dissertation he had written us, he had mentioned this, which I want to point out. And he says, on this point, the magnetic disc should have been a continued ray of hope for the astronauts, but Ron Harper discovered this idea was forgotten in a series development. He said in an interview, early on, Alan Verdon did carry around a computer disc, and he thought that if he could get it to a computer, that might give him an idea of how to travel back through time. By the third or fourth episode, one day, I said, I can't find the computer disc. And they said, never mind, we're not going to use it anymore. What?
That was probably my one big gripe about the show, was I thought they had a really good through story, and then it just disappeared.
Yeah.
I wonder if there are, you know, if you guys have any thoughts on that, why you thought that they might have done that. You know, just said, well, we don't need to deal with this computer chip anymore. It wasn't the producer saying, well, you know, Ron Harper lost the chip, so we can't do that anymore. They obviously had a reason why they just dropped the computer chip, whether they thought it was just going to get too repetitive, or they ran out of ideas and just wanted to keep the story simple and self-contained into, you know, each episode.
I cannot think of a good idea of why that was even a thought. You had a through line there. Why not continue with it? It's just such a perfect thread for the series. I can't see why they would drop it.
I mean, MacGuffins are common, you know, like they quite often kind of just come up with something that's throwaway. But I mean, the thing about that is, if when it was conceived in the first place, it wasn't considered to be that important, really. You know, they'll pick up and drop MacGuffins as it suits them. you know, especially on TV, it's like one week it's important, the next minute it's not. But yeah, they weren't too common with the MacGuffins in the show, so you kind of feel like it had more significance than others.
Well, Alan had his whole history tied up to this one computer disk. Whenever he would look at it, he would remember his wife and his family and his whole home and his farm.
And everything he wanted to get back to.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I've got no good reason why they would ever do that.
The only thing I can think of is that maybe they were trying to push him into heartthrob territory where it's like, this guy's available. Let's not keep like talking about his ex. You know, like, let's make him give him the potential to have love interests. I could see him going there for that reason, you know.
All right, so I think we've said all we could about our ideas of where we want the series to go. But there were some unfilmed scripts out there. Now, Paul, we want to thank you and Guy Godman for telling us about these six scripts that are floating around out there that were never made into episodes.
Cool, right?
So let's run through these six script stories. Now, the first one is called A Fallen God, and Anthony Lawrence wrote the earliest known script for the proposed Planet of the Apes TV series, dated March 2nd, 1973. And this episode featured Pete Allen and Galen, who are already fugitives from the ape authorities. So even before the whole ape series started, these three were already fugitives, and Pete and Allen...
How could that be? The show started with them crash landing.
Well, I know, but this was the earliest script for a Planet of the Apes TV series episode. This is dated March 2nd, 1973. Well, how it makes sense, I don't know. But to give a quick synopsis...
Well, let's make it make sense, because what it could have been is, you know, as they were in the process of actually, you know, planning the show and what they were going to do with it, they might have been thinking, we know we're going to start with a crash landing, but where are we going to go from there? So they had a script maybe written
right
that would show what an episode could be. Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, I love this setup. In a small town resembling the turn of the century American West. Stop right there. I want to see this episode. I'm picturing Galen in a 10-gallon Western hat with a gun belt and the boots and the spurs.
Maybe John Wayne could have made an appearance.
Yeah. Galen goes to investigate whether the inhabitants are friend or foe. In the town, Galen finds an ape crowd gathered around a fanatical religious leader, Preacher Syrinx, who proclaims a message of hatred toward the evil humans. Now, this pretty much sounds like every other episode.
Sounds like it could have been a fun episode, though.
Yeah. Next, we have Hostage. This was written by Stephen Kandel, and the final draft of this one was dated April 5th, 1974. Now, in this one, the three fugitives approach a sleepy human village Galen used to visit as a schoolchild. Oh, Galen backstory. New human control laws mean the humans can't leave their village without permission from the apes, but they see a woman called Catron sneak out and into an area of undergrowth. Chimps, Aro, and Manos soon follow the same route, and the trio fear she will be discovered and punished. When a gorilla soldier also appears, they follow the others into the undergrowth and discover a concealed trapdoor. All right. Oh, are we excited about this one?
Sounds pretty good.
It's starting to sound like Lost, isn't it? They find a trapdoor.
Yeah.
Oh my God, maybe J.J. Abrams got it from here. You know, he was digging through some old unproduced scripts, and there you go.
As a note, in this synopsis, Urko is known as Ursus, and I know they didn't change the name to Urko until Mark Leonard was cast, and he could not say Ursus through the makeup, so then they changed the name to Urso, and he couldn't say Urso, so then they thought, all right, let's just change the name to Urko.
Is that right? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. That is actually kind of interesting.
All right, next up we have The Trial, written by Edward J. Laxo. Now, the original script, unfortunately for this one, is not publicly available, so we just have a quick synopsis here. Alan accidentally kills a gorilla. He kills a gorilla? When would Alan ever have a gun or something that would kill anyone? Alan accidentally kills a gorilla and is ordered to be executed. Galen and Pete convince their village's gorilla leader to hold a trial, and it is revealed that the soldier was drunk at the time. Alan is still sentenced to death, but the other two get his guards drunk and free him. I'm on board with this one.
Yeah, this one sounds exciting. I like the idea of Alan accidentally killing a gorilla. It says accidentally.
Yeah, I'm guessing he did a rolling flip kick, and that killed him.
Yeah, well, that's why Pete's supposed to do it. But I like the idea of him accidentally killing the gorilla, because not only, you know, he's captured, he's going to be put on trial. That sounds interesting. But Alan may be dealing with the fact that he killed this gorilla. Could be interesting.
Now, the whole drunk theme here, I don't know. Well, then again, the 70s were more of a liberal time for something like this. So yeah, I could see drunk apes on a kid's TV show.
I think the apes being drunk also would probably be played more as a humorous thing, as a funny thing, you know, pratfalls, as opposed to, you know, taking it serious, which wouldn't be appropriate for a kid's show.
Oh, I think there's a message in there. Kids, don't drink, especially if you're an ape.
Or you might get accidentally killed by Alan.
You know what they should call this? GADF. Gorillas Against Drunk Fighting.
It's going to make me worry now. Every time I get even the slightest bit drunk, I'm going to be looking at Alan Verdon about to kill me.
See, it's already working. Our job here is done.
The message has got across, even though they didn't make it.
All right, so next we have The Trek. Oh, this one's got Gene Roddenberry written all over it. Now, this was written by Jim Burns. This script is not available as well, so here's the quick synopsis. The story concerns Galen, Alan, and Pete encountering a renegade human tribe. The tribe face extermination by the ape authorities until the trio agreed to lead them on a trek through the Forbidden Zone. Oh, here we go. To an area where they will be free.
See, they already had your idea. They're already planning on going through the Forbidden Zone.
It's the richest area in terms of kind of possibilities because it's such an unknown, you know, because it was a big, we don't go there. It's just so full of possibilities.
I think one of the reasons that I never really thought about the Forbidden Zone for the TV series is I've always associated the Forbidden Zone with the East Coast where the movies take place, and the television show actually takes place on the West Coast.
I just assumed it was wherever the nuke fell, which could have been, you know, anywhere.
Well, since you brought it up, I'm starting to now think that maybe there were multiple Forbidden Zones across the country.
Right, yeah, that's very true.
Well, maybe just the nukes fell like rain, you know, it could have been a huge, you know, amount of devastation. It could have been all over the place, because, I mean, there are ruined cities everywhere look. So
right, I think any area that the apes are afraid of and don't want people to go, they'll just slap the Forbidden Zone label on it.
Right.
All right, next let's get into Freedom Road, written by Arthur Rowe. Now this script is not available as well, so here's another quick synopsis.
Wait, before you go into the synopsis, because you've said this a number of times, where did you find the synopsises for the ones that are not publicly available? Because there are a couple that are, that we'll put links to on Facebook. Where were you finding these synopsises on the ones that weren't publicly available?
Now, Paul, you had sent me an email, and I believe it was from Wikipedia in the Sacred Scrolls.
The go-to place for all the scripts and what have you, in my experience, has been Hunters, Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, you know what? I'm sorry, that's what I meant. Hunters, Planet of the Apes site. It's got a ton of stuff over there.
Very, very voluminous and very, very thorough.
So that would be a good place for our listeners to go to for more information.
Yeah.
There is actually kind of a very clear kind of script connection. So if you just type Hunters and Planet of the Apes into Google, you'll find a link to the right page.
Cool.
Now, in Freedom Road, the story concerns a gorilla prefect investigating the disappearance of numerous humans from his region. Galen, Alan, and Pete discover an underground railroad being used to carry humans to freedom. They find that it is actually a trap set by Urko to ensnare rebellious humans, but they outwit him and the people escape.
You know, I like this one for a couple of reasons, too. I like how they're incorporating a little bit of history and the whole idea of slavery once again, and the whole idea of this underground railroad as a way to escape. Whenever the show seemed to be about something is when it would shine the most. And I also like the idea of this being a trap set by Urko. I think that that's actually a really cool twist.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. It has the Liberator and the trap written all over it.
No, it does not have the Liberator written
yes,
all over
it. Yes, it does.
No, it does
yes,
not. It does. Maybe
it's
a
got a
of
great
the trap,
message in there.
Not the
and
Liberator.
I love
sorry,
it.
Not
Gets some history entangled in there. Mark, I hear what you're saying. You love the Liberator. Let's move on. All right, now
I'm cutting all that out. Nobody will ever hear the word Liberator.
Liberator, Liberator, Liberator. Oh, Liberator. All right, next up, The Mine, written by Paul Savage. I love that name. Paul Savage. Now, this script is not available as well. And this one here is about Galen, Pete, and Alan, and they discover a mill built by an old man using technology from an advanced human city. They try to free him from the salt mine where he has been forced to work, but he is killed before they can learn the city's location. This one has kind of a legacy feel.
This one's actually kind of interesting because you say a mill built by an old man using technology from an advanced human city. And so this is a good one to get us back to the computer.
Oh, right. Yeah, 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 yeah.
And as much as that generally means more Alan backstory, maybe we could get some Pete backstory with it. But I like the idea of getting back to the computer and getting back on track with that. And who knows, maybe they were going to start bringing it up again when this one was written.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I love that direction.
The thing that's kind of tricky about all of this stuff, I think, is that because we're also kind of informed about all the movies. I think that the TV series, as much as we all love it, you know, I think a lot of the sort of subject matter that they chose to sort of write episodes about, it has quite a small feel to it. And I think if the series had continued, it would have had to expand. And I think a lot of the sort of like smaller tales, even the ones that we love, you know, I know we all talk about The Good Seed as being one that we really like, a tiny story about basically a family of farmers, you know, and that's quite kind of a modest sort of adventure, you know, to tell. And yeah, you look at the Planet of the Apes movies, you know, and all of a sudden that world expands straight, you know, by the end of the first film, where you're kind of like, what, they're on Earth and there's the Statue of Liberty, and then beneath the Planet of the Apes lands and you've got all that, and then Escape, you know, you start getting time travel and all that kind of stuff. So before you know it, the story's kind of spiraling out into all these kind of like much larger, kind of more adventurous, kind of, you know, more eventful sort of stories. So for me, I think if the series was going to continue, I think they would have had to travel into very similar kind of, you know, larger dramatic sort of areas. I don't think they could have kept it small. I don't think they could have continued with kind of like a Walton's vibe or anything. I think if it was going to succeed, it would have been essential for it to grow and turn into something with a much more, you know, drama behind it. And that doesn't necessarily mean expensive special effects or you know, huge locations or anything, but somehow it needed to be more kind of dramatically loaded. It would have been essential.
You know, a perfect example of that is actually the reboot movies that they're making now. Because if you pay attention to, you know, Rise of the Planet of the Apes and how it leads into Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, Rise is actually this very simple story. They start off very simple, kind of introducing the character of Caesar, as well as introducing, you know, how he reacts to the world around him with this relationship with the James Franco character and the John Lithgow character, you know, what he learns and what he sees and how he, you know, reacts to it all. And it all stays pretty contained in this very simple kind of introductory story. It really is kind of more of a character story, but then you go into the second story, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, and it gets a little bit more complicated, you know, just in nature of, you know, the humans versus the apes, and then the apes versus the apes because of Koba. And we start to see, you know, the story getting a little bit more complicated as we, you know, head off towards that eventual war between apes and humans. The first movie started off with a relatively simple story of realization, and then the second movie got a little bit more complicated, but didn't lose its characters. And the third movie is probably going to get even more intense. And I think that the same thing should have happened here with this series, you know, where the first season was like, we're getting to know everybody, we're starting to understand where everything's going. And then the second season is when we start to turn it on its head, which if you go back to my description, you know, it was all of a sudden Carcia finding about the computer and wanting to do this overthrow where the humans are learning this. It just gets a lot more complicated, a lot more involved. We had the first season to kind of ease into it, but now with the second season, let's take off. And I think that's kind of what you're saying, and I think that's what they did with Rise of the Planet of the Apes and Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. And I think with the next Planet of the Apes movie, we're going to even get more of that.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I kind of feel as though the next movie's, you know, war is going to be the one that kind of pushes us into familiar territory. I've got a feeling this will be the last one where it's got this feeling. I'm sure that this will be treated as a separate trilogy after this point. I think they're going to push it into areas which feel more like the old movies. I've just got a good feeling about it. I think the thing is, it's very difficult to distance yourself from who we were back in 74 to who we are as people nowadays. And, you know, we're so used to sort of like binge watching shows, you know, via Netflix and stuff like that, in that we've grown accustomed to these kind of overarching stories where evolution is the point. You know, you look at the new Battlestar compared to the original Battlestar, you know, and it's totally about arcs, you know, and it's totally about evolution and change, and progress is definitely apparent in every week. You know, you can kind of feel the tail advancing. And obviously we're living in a world where we can revisit this stuff whenever it suits us, whereas back in 74 it was unlikely that we'd ever get to see it again, at least from where we were sitting. We had no idea how many years we might have to wait before we could watch these episodes again.
Yeah, because there was no VHS and there was no DVD back then, you know. Well, people are probably going, what's VHS? But there was no way to view it like that.
All right. And so we quickly became comfortable with the fact that every TV show didn't really have an arc, you know. And I think so now, sort of looking back at a show this old, it's hard to imagine a season two that's something that we would watch now, you know, that would have been effective as a TV show back in the 70s. I think if somebody kind of decided like, oh, it's time we made a straight follow-up to this and let's bring Vernon Burke back, even if they play by other actors or whatever, you know, I think it would have to be a very different show from the one that it would have been if they'd gone there back in the 70s.
Well, you might have just answered the question from earlier on where I asked, why do you think that they got rid of the computer chip? We're so used to being able to have that access to something like Hulu, where if we miss an episode, we just go on Hulu and we watch it. Back in the early 70s, we didn't have that. So if somebody missed an episode and yet there's a storyline that's taken place over multiple episodes, well, if somebody misses that, you know, middle episode, they might get lost, you know, trying to figure out, you know, what's going on, because they might have missed something important. And let's face it, since there was no VCRs back then to record the episode, there was no telling when they would get to see that episode again. I mean, what would be the point of continuing to watch the show if you're not going to be able to fully understand it? So maybe the producers had this particular thing in the back of their head when they were thinking about the computer chip as a through line, and maybe having a strong through line like that might not be the best thing. But then on the other hand, and I'm going to bring something up since you already opened the door, so Richard can't get mad at me. Well, Battlestar Galactica had that, you know, them trying to find Earth, that through line. Every episode kind of stood on its own, but it did have the through line of having to find Earth. So it can work, but I guess I can also understand why, you know, they may not want to continue a through story on a show in the 70s in fear that, you know, somebody goes on vacation for 2 weeks, what are they going to do? They're going to miss these two episodes now. And that would leave them lost as to what's going on in that through line.
I don't know about that. I think it would have been pretty obvious to tell the viewers in so many words, okay, here's the disc. We need to find the computer to read this to get back home. I think that's enough exposition. So I don't think that CBS was worried that if someone misses an episode, they're going to be lost, because in every episode, they could have just added that one line that explained what the disc was and they would have been fine.
But if we were to go into a continuation like I had just posed, especially because of how complicated it was and how many different directions I had it going in, it would have relied so much on understanding who these characters were, as well as all the different things that are revealed from episode to episode and how they kind of relate to each other over the series as a whole. And if you missed an episode, then you might get a little lost in something as complicated as what I was suggesting. So my where I would like it to go may not have worked in the 70s, although if the studios are listening, it would work awesome right now. Let's talk.
Mark is now taking meetings.
Going off a slight tangent, did you guys see the Boom Planet of the Apes comics? Did you see them? The Exile and Betrayal. Did you see those?
No, I've never seen those.
No.
Oh, you guys have to see these. The reason I mention them now is because Exile and Betrayal kind of tie quite closely into the original movies. And they really, really succeed where no other Planet of the Apes comics have succeeded. And I've seen them all, you know. So there have been all these various different adaptions of, you know, attempts to sort of reboot Planet of the Apes' comic books and stuff like that. None of them have ever quite got the vibe right. But the last kind of couple of volumes by Boom have just been amazing.
Are these new?
Yeah, they've been out for a little while now, for about a year or two. They're literally, it's like watching a movie you didn't know existed.
Wow.
They've really captured the energy and the feel of the old films.
You should send us the information on it, all right, because of what happened earlier in the conversation. You should send Richard the information on it. And maybe
Mark will get it, maybe he won't.
Well, write to me and I'll make sure you get round Robin.
No, that's fine.
Yeah, no, I would love to get the stuff, but not only that, but we can start maybe posting some of this stuff on the Facebook page for other people who might not be aware of these particular, you know, little things that you're mentioning.
Absolutely. It's the greatest Planet of the Apes comic since 74, like, bar none.
We're going to send these to our new media guru, Angela Rushmere, who's just been dynamite at putting everything up on Facebook and keeping us out there. And she got us like 100 new likes within a week. Hey, Angela.
Well, I mean, the reason I mention that anyway is that I just think that they're a great example of the way that you can kind of play with those old, you know, approaches to sort of storytelling and yet make them kind of relevant and entertaining to sort of, you know, people in this day and age. I think that you could have had an overall, you know, an arc of some description, although it would have had to be a simpler one. So I think your version of the story could still work. I think it might have to be streamlined down into sort of something a little bit more digestible for a 70s audience. But I think nowadays, I think that people would be really receptive to it. And I think Planet of the Apes, I don't think it got even close to exhausting its welcome. I think that it had so much potential in terms of stories. I think they managed to succeed so well at creating these characters that we all still, you know, hold in such high regard that we're talking about them now, you know, all these years later, you know. And for me, I always think it was kind of like very sad that the series got cancelled when it did. I still think, you know, that it was a mistake. I still think that show, you know, if it had landed maybe a year later, like I say, and that it really kind of, you know, maybe got carried away with that whole kind of Star Wars zeitgeist of everybody wanted to have a science fiction show at the time, then I think it would have had much better fortune. I think it would have done a lot better. But with these things, it's always time. And I think the TV show just landed at slightly long time. Wouldn't it be amazing if we had like 12 years of these as a box set?
Yeah, that would be pretty awesome.
But you know what? Maybe I can help answer all these questions, because like we were saying at the beginning of the show, in 1981, Roddy McDowall returned to the Planet of the Apes world when he reprised his role of Galen when ABC had re-edited certain TV episodes to make up 5 TV movies. Now, to mark this week-long marathon, which was called The New Planet of the Apes, new segments were recorded for the start and end of each movie, so we had 10 clips altogether. And these clips featured Galen, now sporting some gray hair, recalling his adventures with Pete and Alan some years after the events of the TV series.
I was expecting you today. I'm fully prepared for the afternoon. Now, won't you join me? Our story, yes, of course. Now, if you remember, my astronaut friends, Verdon and Burke, are in quite a fix, you see. Yes, marooned 1,000 years in the future. By their time, of course. Hunted by my fellow apes. Seeking some silly computer to repair their flying machine, and now trapped by that horrible creature, Urko. Well, let's see what happens, shall we? In the forgotten city of the Planet of the Apes.
So they do wrap up the TV series within this new re-edited TV marathon.
I don't know if they necessarily wrap it up, although we are given a conclusion from Galen in the very last one, and a conclusion that I really like. And I like the idea that they actually put some of these together with Galen kind of talking at the beginning and the end, because it's treated almost like, sit around, boys and girls, I'm going to tell you, you know, these stories of these adventures that I went on with these two humans. And I really like that.
Yeah. And they do say it's a couple of years later. Galen is now sporting a mullet with some gray hair. So you got to wonder how much time has passed. But they do put a cap on the whole Planet of the Apes TV series. And I love this. Now, you can see all of these clips on YouTube, and I recommend everyone go out and watch these, and we'll put a link on our show notes because you've got to see this. Did you guys notice in these clips anything odd in the room where Galen is sitting?
Like a computer?
He's got a Commodore 64 behind there.
You know, I got to tell you something. What I really like about the computer in the background is I didn't notice it at first. And I didn't actually think about it until I saw the last one. And then I go back and I'm watching them again, because they're all like only about 30 seconds. And I'm like, they're pretty much giving us the answer right up front by putting that computer back there. Obviously, the computer was found.
Yep.
Because there's one right back there. They happened to find a really old computer.
It'd be funny if Galen just said, you know what, I've always been meaning to tell Pete and Alan, I got a computer right at home, but I just keep forgetting. I just kept forgetting. I'm sorry, guys. And did you notice, more importantly, take a breath here, did you notice when Galen mentions the gorilla soldier, he says Urko, not Orko? I've got to say that right up front. Whenever he mentions him, he always says Urko, never Orko.
Such interesting creatures, your Burke and Verdon, and in such a fix. Well, not to mention the fact that I was up to here myself. The Burke track down there with that beast Urko. I never did like him, you know, not even one little bit. Yeah, but I suppose we all feel trapped in our world at some time or another. So much to do, so little time in which to do it. But let us see tomorrow, shall we, how much time Burke may have. It was nice of you to come and spend some of your time with me. Until tomorrow, then.
Well, you know, we don't actually ever have to have this argument again, you know, the whole Urko or Orko debate, because, you know, Angela, our good friend Angela, she pointed out to us that Urko actually says his own name in one of the episodes. I didn't remember it until she pointed it out, but I guess in the good seats, he says his own name. She actually posted a clip on Facebook, and you know something? For our listeners, I'm just going to play the clip right now.
I'm Urko, headquarters.
See, it's Urko. We've been right. Ron Harper was wrong.
Now, you guys, did you ever remember seeing these shows? I know, Paul, you had mentioned earlier that you only had BBC and BBC 1 and 2.
Yeah, and ITV. Yeah, no, we didn't. Oh, I would have loved to, though.
Yeah.
I mean, I totally missed this. I mean, it was one of those things where I think, like, I'm at the risk of sounding like a granddad, you know? Unless you kind of really like paid attention to all the kind of TV listings in the papers and stuff like that, you had no idea what was coming down the pipe. You know, I mean, we're so blessed now to have the internet and have access to this information. It means that we don't miss things. I mean, when the cartoon show started, you know, I think it had been on for weeks before I even knew it existed.
And something like this, I'm getting the feeling it was from an ABC affiliate, so it was on syndication, so it could have been on like 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock, because these wraparound segments that Roddy McDowall had shot as Galen, they don't feel high quality.
They feel very thrown together. And I get the impression, and I think you said this earlier, that they played every night, 5 nights in a row, because I believe in the actual interstitials, he says, you know, tomorrow night, join me tomorrow night, and stuff like that. I don't remember ever seeing these put together in this form, and I'd heard of them, but I don't think I ever saw them. But as I look at how they were grouped together, it'd be really interesting to watch them in this order, because as we discussed last week, sometimes the order of things can affect how you feel about an episode. And so I'd be real interesting to see in this order how they were.
All right, so let me give you a rundown. So grab a pen in case you want to watch them in this order. The first movie was called Back to the Planet of the Apes, and this featured the episodes Escape from Tomorrow and The Trap. I can see that working, because they're both very Urko-centric episodes.
Yeah, I could see that working too. I just, because The Trap is so high up on my list of top five, I like it being a little deeper. And not only that, I really think that The Legacy should be grouped with Escape from Tomorrow, because it just seems like the perfect continuation of that pilot episode that I thought they would have worked really great together, as we discussed in last week's episode.
Yeah. And the next TV movie called The Forgotten City of the Planet of the Apes featured the episodes The Gladiators and The Legacy. I'm not really seeing this one.
Yeah, they seem a bit old, don't they?
Yeah, that sounds kind of like an odd pairing, too. I'm just not sure that they really have enough in common that they would go together. But, you know, once again, I still really want to see The Legacy with Escape from Tomorrow. So I think that that pairing is the only one I'm going to accept with Escape from Tomorrow and Legacy.
All right, next up, we have Treachery and Greed on the Planet of the Apes. And this one featured, yes, the horse race and the tyrant. I'm loving that.
Yeah, this is a good pairing. As much as I don't like the horse race, I think with this pairing, it might have worked a little bit better because, well, because Urko is so, you know, over the top in the horse race, and then we get the tyrant with Abaro. And I think the pairing of how Urko acts in the horse race with the way Abaro acts, the horse race might have worked better in this kind of ordering.
All right, yeah, you know what? I totally see your point there. That's a good idea. Then on Thursday, they aired Life, Liberty, and The Pursuit on the Planet of the Apes. And this one featured the episodes The Surgeon and The Interrogation. Now, this one here, when they opened up on Galen, he's playing a game of Operation. It's not really Operation. It's just he's going through this, like a model of a human structure, and he's needling at it, and it looked like he's playing the game of Operation. I expected any minute him to go, eh. And then at the end, when they tie up the whole movie, he's sewing something. They don't really show you what he's sewing. He's just doing some needlepoint.
You know, this is a really good pairing as well, because they're both Galen backstory. With The Surgeon, we get his ex-girlfriend, and in The Interrogation, we get his mom and dad.
Yeah.
So this is actually a really good pairing as well.
All right, the last one, Farewell to the Planet of the Apes. And this one featured the episodes Tomorrow's Tide and Up Above the World So High.
So before we get into this pairing, you'll notice that nowhere in any of these pairings do they put the Liberator. Just wanted to say, they put the horse race in, but no place for the Liberator.
Oh, wait a minute. But on Saturday, they aired The Horse Race and The Liberator.
Yeah, okay. So The Horse Race got two airings?
It was titled, Mark, This Is Your Planet of the Apes.
This Tomorrow's Tide and Up Above the World So High pairing, I'm not sure how it works. I'd have to see them together. They both kind of take place on the ocean side, but I have a problem because they both kind of end the same way, you know, with them going out to sea.
Even realize that.
I don't know if I like this pairing just based on that alone.
Yeah, they both ended with, well, they're too far out, so I guess we just turn our backs and leave. That's funny.
But now Farewell to the Planet of the Apes had the most interesting of the Roddy McDowell little segments, the older Galen little segments, because I really love the way they ended it with the very last segment.
Well, tell us how they started this segment.
Well, the segments were basically, you know, just, they felt to me like they were just introductions to the show to kind of throw it in there as a, you know, I'm going to tell the story.
And that's what they were.
But the end one, the last one, it felt very smart and it had a point to it. It wasn't just there to say, we're going to wrap it all up. And that's because the last one, it plays like this.
Mm-hmm. And there you have it. And there you have it. Rodenenberg, oh, well, they found their computer in another city and disappeared into space as suddenly as they'd arrived. What about me? Oh, I certainly could have gone with them. Back to your time, your world, where apes are kept in zoos. Tell me now, would you have come to my world willingly? Hmm? You will, eventually. Of course.
It's only a matter of time.
Of course, this final wraparound starts off by answering the question of what happened to Pete and Alan by revealing, you know, that they eventually found the computer and then disappeared back into space. But it gets really interesting when it goes one step further when Galen answers the question of why he didn't go back with them. He basically brings up the fact that their time is one where apes are kept in zoos. And then he poses the question of whether we would go into his world, the world of Planet of the Apes, willingly. But he doesn't really give us an option of an answer. We can't, like, say no, we wouldn't, because he then insinuates that we will eventually by saying it's only a matter of time. And then they cut to an image that I'm not going to describe. It's a visual. Go online and take a look at it. It really kind of says, you know, that apes are going to be running the Earth one day and the humans are going to be subservient.
It's almost a callback from the original Planet of the Apes film. Very telling how things are gonna go.
Right, and I actually think it was a very smart ending, and I think that what made this final wraparound work all that much stronger was because all the other ones are kind of very welcome, so glad that you're here, I'm gonna tell you this story, and then this final one comes out at the end of the final movie, and it's not very welcoming. It's actually, you know, got kind of a downer of a message by saying, you know, humans are going to be lower than apes at one time, and you pretty much have no choice. That's just where history is going to take you. And then it gives you this really creepy image. It's kind of out of nowhere. It's in contrast with the other, you know, wraparounds. It really is unexpected. And it's awesome because of it.
I think the thing that amuses me no end about this as well, Mark, is it really feels like a Rod Serling ending. It feels like very, very Twilight Zone, and it, in that it's creepy as anything too. So I imagine as a kid, just, you know, you get into this comfort zone every week of, oh, there's my friend Galen saying hello, and then yeah, the very last episode they pull this one on you and it's like you're all doomed and apes will rule you.
The visual is very creepy too, and I don't want to go into too much detail. This is going to be the one spoiler that we don't spoil. I want people to, you know, go to YouTube and look at it, because it's just a very creepy kind of thing that he shows us, and it's just really, really great.
Yeah, it almost seems like Galen was very hardened by the departure of Alan and Pete, and all of a sudden his mind got kind of warped when we see this last image and what he's talking about. Because it seems like a darker side of Galen.
I've got a question for you guys. Where is he? Where is that room?
He is at the Apple store at the Cerritos Mall. He's got the computer, and he's got a desk lamp.
Yeah, that's definitely the first place that's going to get it when the bombs drop, isn't it?
Is that his home? I mean, is he free now that Pete and Alan have escaped? Wouldn't he still be hunted?
That's what I'm wondering, is like, where is he that he can be so comfortable as to have all this human stuff on display?
Well, you do get a feeling that it's very bomb shelter-ish.
Yeah, I mean, he feels like he's out in the forbidden zone to me. I mean, I just kind of like think it's got to be there. I mean, especially for there be such an abundance of human artifacts, you know?
I think Galen has turned Ben Kenobi, and now he's a hermit living out in the middle of the Forbidden Zone.
It would have been awesome if that doll they find in Planet of the Apes had been, like, sitting on his shelf. Because that could have been his room, you know, that cave.
It all comes back to, Mama!
Maybe it's all explained in Zira and Cornelius Live.
Oh, we've got to review that. We've got to review that.
You know how they always used to weave, like, you know, very complicated kind of, you know, puzzles in things like Lost? And nowadays, that seems to be par for the course in a lot of the kind of drama that we watch on TV. And it's way more complicated than we ever got in the 70s. It does make you wonder that nowadays, if they were going to kind of pursue this kind of a story where, they, you know, like you say, they're always in Ape City and they always get away with it. And a nice finale might have been if it turned out that Zaius had the big picture all figured out because, like you say, he either discovered a paper or read a book about the future. And he's actually had the big game in mind for the whole time, and that Galen's secretly a double agent, and that he's actually waiting for the right moment to kind of, you know, kill Alan and Pete, but it's got to be the right time, you know.
You know, as much as I think it's a cool twist, that would crush my world, man.
All right, you know what, let's not even go there, because now we're going more toward the darker side of Galen, and my head can't comprehend that.
Say it ain't so, Galen, say it ain't so.
Mark? Mark, we've gotten a lot of listener feedback from our ape listeners out there, and I know our last couple of shows have run kind of long, but I really want to point out some stuff that the apes have written in and told us. So are you ready for these?
I'm always ready for the listener feedback.
All right, because these are quite interesting, especially this first one that comes from Chickafant, and I can't wait to get to this.
You mean the novel that Chickafant wrote us?
Yeah, Chickafant really took some time and pointed out some of their likes and dislikes from the series in the recap. Unfortunately, we got their email a little bit too late. We'd already recorded the episode. But what I'm referring to here is this. Chickafant writes, "If I may suggest as a topic for a future episode, why do you dislike the Tim Burton version of the Apes world? I'm not asking that you spend an entire episode on the topic, because I don't see either of you as people who would just pour negativity into the universe, yet I do wonder what it is that bothers you about that version. As for the future of the show, my dad and I have no doubt that you two will keep us ape fans entertained, while we all learn a thing or two along the way. Your love for Planet of the Apes franchise and those involved in the world has no bounds. Thank you for continuing to share that with the rest of us. My dad and I hope you have an ergotastic summer ahead of you." I love that. "We know we will, because there'll be more Talking Apes TV episodes to enjoy. Keep up the great work, Chickafant." What do you think about this Tim Burton suggestion?
I actually think that doing an episode on the Tim Burton movie isn't necessarily a bad idea, because there's so much there to talk about on why it was ineffective. And I think it could be a really interesting topic. And I actually think we've talked about this on the show before. Unfortunately, it means we have to sit through the movie again, and then we would have to take notes on the movie. And I'm not necessarily sure I'm willing to do that. Maybe we could, you know, spend 5 or 10 minutes on it one time. I don't know. As much as I would like to maybe sit down and have a conversation about it, I don't look forward to, you know, having to watch it and the having to take the notes.
Well, if Chickafant spent this much time on their big email, I think we owe it to them to go ahead and do it.
Maybe Chickafant should sit down and watch the movie, and then Chickafant should do a podcast on it.
No, but you know, I do think this is a good idea to watch it, and then, because people have asked us, why is it that you don't like the Tim Burton version? And I think this would be a good answer to everybody. And it wouldn't be, like Chickafant says, to pour negativity. It would just be our reasons why we don't like this film.
Right, and I think that, you know, negativity might come into play when we do that, but the fact of the matter is when you're critiquing something or reviewing something and you're being honest about it, it's not that you're there to be negative. You're just there to honestly inform people about what the film is. And this just wasn't a very good attempt, because it just seemed to not know where it was supposed to go, and the characters weren't very strong. There's just a lot of problems with it.
When you say 5 or 10 minutes, you know nothing we ever do is 5 or 10 minutes.
Yeah, I know. But I think that if we were to do a talk about it, it would be, all right, let's sit down and rewatch the movie and then talk about it. Don't worry about going into the detail that we go into, and don't worry about taking all the notes that we have to take in order to do that. Just watch it and then talk about our initial reaction to it.
I think that's a great idea, and thank you, Chickafant, for cementing that into our heads.
So why don't we do that in a couple of episodes? Not next episode, because we got some stuff already planned for that, but maybe, you know, 6 or 7 episodes down the road.
That's a good idea, and I do look forward to, now that we've gone into the films and the TV series, now it'll be fun to watch this.
Did I just commit to watching the Tim Burton?
Yes, you did. And you can thank Chickafant for that.
God, I hope it's streaming for free somewhere.
Now, our next email comes from Mike Sinclair. And Mike says, "It really is incredible how you both can make a podcast over 2 hours about a 50-minute show and keep it so lively and entertaining. I like this so far. Anyhow, the time flies when I listen in the car, and I do laugh out loud at times listening to you guys. Hope that's a good thing. I have to say, I'm glad you're keeping it going with an animated series." Oh, I can't wait for that. "But those stories, and especially the animation, are weak." Well, of course.
Well, now I don't look forward to it. Thanks, Mike. No, just kidding. I'm really looking forward to it.
"I'm sure your podcast will make me want to go back and view them again. Hopefully, you'll do the movies afterwards, and even the books or even the comic books. There is so much there in the Planet of the Apes universe. You'll have to change the name of the podcast to Talking Apes, because after the cartoon series, you're through with TV. Thanks again for all your entertainment. Mike Sinclair." A lot of stuff in there.
Yeah, well, my message to Mike is basically, you know, listen to our podcast as we talk about the animated series, and who knows, maybe we'll find some stuff in there to like. I'm actually really hoping that I enjoy the animated series, and who knows, maybe we'll find some stuff to point out and change his mind about his feelings.
You know, the animation by Filmation is just going to be weak. That's just a sign of the times, but I'm looking for any kind of continuity to the movies. I seriously doubt there'll be any continuity to the TV show. We already know that there's one connection to the movies, and that's that Austin Stoker, the actor who plays McDonald in Battle for the Planet of the Apes, also voices one of the characters in the Return to the Planet of the Apes cartoon series. But I know there's going to be more. I'm hoping there's going to be more connections.
Right. Well, you know, my response to the fact that the animation is weak, that's not going to bother me. I guarantee that's not going to bother me because I grew up on that kind of animation. And when I watch old animated shows from back then, it doesn't bother me because it's very nostalgic in its feel when I see something like that. I'm just hoping the stories are good, and I will consider this the greatest animated series ever if they reflect back on the TV series and there's some Pete backstory. Like the new humans find some cave somewhere and there's a book, you know, that reflects back on the TV series. And like, there was a human that landed named Pete and he was this.
Boy.
I don't know. I'm hoping. I'm still hoping.
According to all this written stuff by these chimpanzees, this guy Pete Burke had quite the backstory.
Yeah. I'd be like, yeah, tell me some. And then they'd put the book aside and say, but it's not important.
Well, let's talk about this guy here, Alan Verdon. Let's talk more about him.
Yeah, he's more important.
But now Mike Sinclair brings up a good point. When we're done with the animated shows, what's going to be the name of our podcast since we're done with the TV shows?
I don't know. What are we going to call the show? I mean, everybody knows it as Talking Apes TV. I don't want them to get lost looking for something else.
So I think we're just going to keep it with Talking Apes TV because that was the foundation of the whole podcast, was the live action series. So that pays homage to that. We'll leave it at that. But he does say, are you going to do the books or the comic books? And I know Paul Bateman has been sending us tons of comic books from England in the annual, so it might be fun to peruse those as well.
Right. I think that if we were to do the books or the comic books, though, I don't know if I'd want to go into so much detail because watching a 50-minute episode takes 50 minutes. Reading a book, on the other hand, can take me days. And so we might want to, like, not do it scene by scene in the books and the comics, but just kind of, like we were talking about with the Tim Burton version, just kind of giving our overall reactions and such.
Well, I do think we should do those read and listen books that came out in the 70s where you play the 45 record and it repeated what you read in the book. I think we should do those. Those would be fun and nostalgic.
Well, there's just so many things that we could do. And as soon as we're done with the animated series, you know.
Yeah. So now we got one more message here from Facebook. This is from Derek Spear, and he is at Lonnie_Spear on Twitter. And Derek says, hey, hey, guys. I love when you guys say, hey, hey, guys. So I have a question, and unfortunately for Rich, it does not involve Urko's helmet. All right, so I'm done with this one. Doesn't involve Urko's helmet. I've got no more interest in it.
Get back here.
All right, fine. So the series takes place some 2,000 years into the future with primitive technology. So where do you get the guns and, more importantly, the ammunition? The argument could be made that it's from the time before the world was nearly destroyed. But wouldn't you think that in that time they would have run out of ammo or broken or jammed all the guns? Well, may the force be with you and Urko never catch you. I like that. May the force be with you and Urko never catch you. So that's a very good point, which we've brought up many times before, especially when Urko takes out his German Luger pistol. Like, where's he getting this?
I think it's kind of obvious where they get them. The guns probably were first used by the apes. Well, we know they were first used by the apes when, you know, they started to revolt against the humans. So as time goes by, they're not going to get rid of their weapons. My question would be, how come it never advanced past these guns that look like, you know, the guns you buy at Toys R Us? In the thousands of years, it seems the question would be, how come they didn't advance into, like, laser pistols or something? How come they never advanced to that point? But then again, the whole ape civilization is pretty primitive. So I guess it does kind of make sense, because one of the things about the apes is that you almost get the impression that they held back advancing their technology because they were too scared to become what the humans became. And so maybe that's why they still have guns that look like they were carved out of wood, except for the German Luger pistol. But I think that it just would be passed on and passed on. And as the years went on, yeah, guns would jam, but somebody's going to have the technology and the smarts with all the scientists and everything to be able to build new ones.
Yeah, but what about the ammunition?
You don't think they would be able to figure out gunpowder and how to make it and stuff like that?
And then pack it into a little metal shell?
Yeah.
I don't think they have that kind of technology.
Well, but, you know, some of the chimpanzees are pretty smart and some of the orangutans are pretty smart. The only really dumb apes are the gorillas.
And ironically, they're the ones who have the guns.
I think they'd have been able to figure it out.
Well, Derek, thank you very much, and thank you for the new catchphrase, may the force be with you, and Urko never catch you. Well, everyone, thank you for your messages and your emails and your Facebook posts. Please keep them coming, because we love to read them. All right, guys. Well, I don't know about you, but I had a blast going through all of these proposed ideas of the Planet of the Apes TV series. So before we wrap things up, are there any final thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've all kind of come to the conclusion that basically when Planet of the Apes inevitably comes back to TV, because it has to, that we clearly are the right people to No, there's absolutely no doubt in my mind that, you know, we speak for the masses when it comes to, you know, the future of the apes.
Fox, we are now taking meetings. All right, so we're going to wrap things up by thanking everyone for joining us once again on Talking Apes TV as we complete our look at the Planet of the Apes live-action TV series.
And of course, let's not forget to thank Rob Dellinger. He is the composer of the Talking Apes TV theme song, and if anybody wants to find more of his work, they can visit his website at robdellinger.com. That's spelled robdellinger.com. And we'd also like to thank Angela Rushmere for all the social media work that she's been doing on our Facebook page.
And please, everyone, join me and my wife, Sarah, on our Star Wars Disney podcast, Skywalking Through Neverland, which can be found on the Shot Glass Digital Network, Stitcher, and skywalkingthroughneverland.com. For our next episode, we're going to start breaking down the animated series from 1975. And if anyone has anything to share about this series, please contact us at apestv@skywalkingthroughneverland.com, or you can tweet at us at skywalkingpod, or write us a message on Facebook, facebook.com/talkingapestv. And if you get a chance, we would love to see some more iTunes reviews so we know what you are liking about our show. So, Paul, thank you once again for joining us. We really had a blast talking to you.
Thanks for inviting me. It's been a lot of fun. And you told me a lot of stuff that I hadn't heard before. I didn't realize.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to sleep dreaming of another 12 seasons that didn't happen.
Yeah, me too.
All right. So for Talking Apes TV, this is Richard.
This is Mark.
And we will leave you with a clip from the very first episode in the Return to the Planet of the Apes TV series titled Flames of Doom. Now go ape.
Honored Council, with all due respect to General Urko, I must plead for an alternate course.
No. No.
If humanoids indeed now possess the ability to speak, as General Urko maintains, they must not be destroyed. They must be studied. This gives us the greatest opportunity we have ever had to do research on our simian origins.
Rubbish! Humanoids are nothing but a scourge to all of us. They should be eradicated, not studied.
This debate is over. We have heard the arguments for both sides and issue the following decree. Since it has not been ascertained with certainty that humanoids do indeed possess language, we are not prepared at this moment to condemn their species to extermination. They may be hunted in the usual manner for legitimate sport. They may be captured alive and used for menial labor or as domestic pets. And for study by our chimpanzee behavioral scientists. However, if indeed it is proven that the humanoid animals have developed language, then according to Article 18 of the Book of Simian Prophecy, we will destroy them no matter what the cost might be.
Thank you once again for listening to Talking Apes TV. You can help support Talking Apes TV by posting about us on Facebook, Twitter, or just tell another Planet of the Apes fan. We would also appreciate a 5-star review on iTunes. A link to our iTunes page can be found at skywalkingthroughneverland.com. Talking Apes TV was created by Richard Woloski and Marco Gushowitz. Graphic design by Sarah Woloski. Talking Apes TV is not affiliated with 20th Century Fox or the CBS network. All names, sounds, and related items of Planet of the Apes are registered, trademarked, and copyright 20th Century Fox and the respected trademark and copyright holders, all rights reserved. Talking Apes TV is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Hey Hey Entertainment, copyright 2014. All rights reserved. No part of the show may be repurposed, reproduced, redistributed, or rebroadcast without the written permission of Hey Hey Entertainment.